Nima, listen to the hyperbole. This is a rank, rank amateur. Listen to the hyperbole. Quote, there's never been a more serious leader atop America. That includes Abraham Lincoln, George Washington, Dwight David Eisenhower, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, and a host of others who were pretty good leaders. He's a rank amateur. And let's talk about duplicity. What did the United States do after allying itself with Europe, Germany, the Permanent Five, and creating the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action with treaty force in everyone else's mind, including President Biden, really? Maybe not the Senate, but definitely President Biden. And what did Trump do? He left that agreement which had curbed any possibility for at least 25 years of Iran's getting a nuclear weapon. He left it, just summarily left it, violating international law, violating his agreement with all those other parties, violating his agreement with the UN Security Council. Hegseth said, do a little research, get your act together. Don't act like a fool every time you stand up. And oh, by the way, Petey boy, let me tell you about your armed forces. Let me tell you about how they would get whipped if they tried anything against Iran. Whipped, beaten. And oh, by the way, Petey, do you know there's a fatwa out that a foreign minister from Iran looked me in the eye and in perfect English said, would you like us to operationalize this fatwa? That's a good word, isn't it? He knew I was a military professional. Operationalize, that's a good English word, isn't it? We'll go to the UN and operationalize it, sign it in blood in front of the Security Council. We do not want a nuclear weapon. It is anti our religion to have a nuclear weapon. What Petey and Donald are doing, contrary to what he just told that idiot at Fox News, they're forcing Iran into a position where it might have to, regardless of its religious inhibitions, go ahead and develop a nuclear weapon. But I can tell you right now, Nima, there is no way the United States military can carry out the threat that Petey just said. And one of the things I learned serving Colin Powell and H.W. Bush, who was as good a president as we've had in the post-World War II era, Petey, H.W. Bush, got that? Petey. One of the things they knew was not to make threats that you couldn't make good on.
The situation, Larry, with Yemen and the way that they're trying to, we talked before coming up on live, we talk about the way that the United States is attacking Yemen. Do you think it's a way to intimidate Iran? That's why they're doing this? Or is that related to the situation between Israel and Palestine? How much of importance does it have? Is that, how do you evaluate that?
It's difficult to evaluate it because, as Petey said, I'm going to call him Petey from now on, just like I call Victoria Nuland Nudge. Petey said, this has everything to do with Iran, but it has everything to do with Israel. Because why did the Al-Ansar, Houthis, why did they start up again? They made it perfectly clear why they were doing what they were doing in the Red Sea. It was because of the treatment of the Palestinians in Gaza and elsewhere. That's why they started up again, because look at what Netanyahu has done. I was just looking at Haaretz this morning. This is despicable. Israel has struck in Syria again and killed some people in Syria. But here's the most despicable thing. This just came out. This is the HRC's 58th session and a report entitled, quote, more, listen to this title, quote, more than a human can bear. Colon, Israel's systematic use of sexual, reproductive, and other forms of gender-based violence since October the 7th, 2023. The Independent International Commission of Inquiry on the Occupied Palestinian Territory, including East Jerusalem and Israel, finds the following. It's despicable. And that's the reason Al-Ansar, the Houthis, are doing what they're doing. And they've said that. They've been explicit about that. So, if you want to stop the Houthis from doing what they're doing in the Red Sea, which is very effective, it's killed the port of Eilat, for example, absolutely killed it. It's very effective. Maritime insurers aren't insuring, and many shippers aren't shipping. And the Red Sea, the last time I got a briefing on it about 7 or 8 years ago at that place Donald Trump closed down, U.S. Institute of Peace, by the military, who was using the USIP to do a tabletop war game, the briefing I got was 50 to 60% of the world's commerce regularly passes through the Red Sea, far more important than the Persian Gulf. That's what we've done. That's what the empire has done. It's caused all that additional cost for people shipping because they can't ship through the Red Sea. And we aren't doing anything really significant to open it back up. If we were, insurers would insure and shippers would ship. Very familiar with that. Very familiar with that. When we did in January 2009, the petroleum disruption exercise in the financial district in Beijing, we had maritime insurers there. We had Lloyd's of London there and others. We had maritime shippers there. We had the U.S. Shipping Council there. We did some things in that simulation with the Chinese, the Koreans, the Japanese, and others that disrupted oil flow. People quit shipping. Oil went to $300 a barrel. Well, we're looking at that sort of situation right now in the Red Sea because the military might of the United States cannot prevail against this group of people in Yemen. I don't care what Petey says, and he can bomb the place to pieces. He's not going to stop them. The only way you would stop al-Ansar is to mount the peninsula there, as it were, by the Bab el-Mandeb or wherever. You'd have to go ashore somewhere, the port of Hodeidah or wherever. The Saudis wouldn't do it and invade. That's the only way. And that's the only way you're going to take Iran down too and ensure it doesn't have a nuclear weapon. And I guarantee you, Nima, as I've said many times before, that's a 10-year war, $3-4 trillion, 100,000 casualties. And at the end of it, it'll look sort of like Iraq or worse. So what are we talking about? Please tell me. You tell me. What are we talking about? Who are these people who are running this empire now? Who are these people? Petey says Trump has this power of strategic indecisiveness. That's a power for a power like the United States to be strategically indecisive, to have all the leaders in the world trying to figure out where you're going next. It's a great way to get rid of your allies and friends and a great way to please your enemies, ultimately. Steadfastness. Powell used to say that. Steadfastness. He also would quote Thucydides all the time. Only one passage did he quote from Thucydides. And I never saw him put anything under the glass on his desk except this passage. And it says in English, restraint is that aspect of power men admire most.
Larry, what I do see in the Trump administration is this. I don't know what is the grand strategy on their part, but you see everyday actions to make some sort of reactions in Russia, Iran, in the Middle East. These are daily based sort of strategy and tactics. It seems that they're trying to learn the behavior of the other party by implementing these sort of, I don't know, once they said that they're going to, the way that they're treating Iran, the way that they're not communicating to Iran. If you see what Witkoff said in his interview with Tucker Carlson, he literally said, we didn't talk with Hamas.
Yes.
So if you're serious in the sort of negotiations that you're doing, you have to talk with both parties to bring it to some sort of sanity. How you can talk with one party and the other party is not that much important to talk with?
Well, the other party is even subhuman. That's the way they look at it. They look at it the same way Bibi Netanyahu looks at it. They're subhuman, even though they're all Semites and they're brothers and sisters. It's a nonsensical situation. But you just put your finger on one of the greatest weaknesses of this administration. It doesn't study. It doesn't look at history. It doesn't think that's important. It thinks it has such a surfeit of power that it doesn't need to study. It doesn't need to understand its friends and its enemies. It doesn't need any of that. It just uses brute power, whether it's sanctions or military force or the threat of both. That's what their whole recipe for diplomacy, I don't even want to call it diplomacy, for international relations is. That's what Hegseth just described in that kind of diatribe on the White House lawn, I think he was, to the cameras. He just said, we don't need to study people. We don't need to understand people, enemies or friends. We don't need to do any of that because our power is so great that if any of them offend us, we will bash them. And they better not try to do anything that will cause us to bash them, like build a nuclear weapon.
Larry, here is what Witkoff said about Iran in his latest interview, as I mentioned, with Tucker Carlson.
With that all said, he wrote that letter. And why did he write that letter?
For people who aren't aware of the letter, can you just roughly describe what it said?
It roughly said, I'm a president of peace. That's what I want. There's no reason for us to do this militarily. We should talk. We should clear up the misconceptions. We should create a verification program so that nobody worries about weaponization of your nuclear material. And I'd like to get us to that place because the alternative is not a very good alternative. That's a rough encapsulation of what was said, roughly. And the president has said that. He's said that, so I'm not telling you anything top secret or anything of that sort. The Iranians have reached back out. And I'm not at liberty to talk about the specifics, but clearly through back channels, through multiple countries and multiple conduits, they've reached back out. I think that it has a real possibility of being solved diplomatically, not because I've talked to anybody in Iran, but just because I think logically it makes sense that it ought to be solved diplomatically. It should be. I think the president has acknowledged that Iran, that he's open to an opportunity to clean it all up with Iran, where they come back to the world and be a great nation once again.
Larry, the way that he's picturing, somehow it seems so much understandable. But when you see the reality of what Donald Trump and his administration is doing, do you think, are we getting the same sort of feeling, the way that they're behaving?
Well, Witkoff is one of the members of the administration, and you just saw it there, who at least is a mild-mannered gentleman, apparently. Now, I know his reputation as a real estate guy, but he's a New Yorker after all, or I think he is. But here again, you're looking at a vast ignorance, and you can parse that ignorance even as he speaks. And whether he feels the same way about knowing his enemy, as I just described, you ought to in order to do good diplomacy, I don't know, but it's pretty clear from what he said there, even though it was mild-mannered and it seemed explicable, it seemed like a smart thing to say, and on the surface it was, demonstrated an ignorance. Most potently towards the end, where he says Iran can come back into the world and be a nation again. Dude, Iran is already in the world, already 90 million strong, already a nation, already fought a brutal, brutal 8-year war with Iraq that it was winning and would have probably marched into Baghdad had it not been for the United States pouring its weight behind the UN Security Council resolution calling for a ceasefire and a peace and making sure it threw its weight behind Saddam Hussein as well, having backed both sides during the war like a seesaw during the course of the 8 years. This is a country. This is a country with a history of one of the most powerful empires in the history of humans on this earth. And you're talking about bringing them back into the world? What is your prerogative to bring them back in the world? Now, I know he's ignorant, and I don't use that derisively. I know he has not studied the country. He is not versed in Persian history. He's not versed in Southwest Asia. He's not versed in anything but New York real estate, primarily. That's all I can conclude. But this is not the way you do business. I like his manner. I like the way he's very calm and he uses good English and he describes things like in the immediate moment they might seem to be. But think about what he's saying with regard to the JCPOA too. You already had an agreement. Iran is looking at the United States of America as a state in the state system, however much it might disgust them to do that. And it says to itself, we made an agreement with you. We don't care who's president now or who was president then. We made an agreement. It was signed, sealed, and delivered with some of our blood. And we made it with the Europeans, the Russians, the Chinese, the Security Council. My God. And you're trying to tell me you're going to bring us back in the world if we do another deal with you? Why on earth would we think that you would stick to that deal? Why would we not conclude that 4 years down the road, 3.5 years down the road, oh, you're going to be an autocrat and stay in office? Well, tell us that, and maybe we'll think differently. I mean, this is so flawed, so majorly flawed. But let me come to what I've been saying all along, many times. Trump wants a deal. Trump wants a deal. He wants to throw that deal up into the face of the Biden administration, and he wants to say it's a better deal, and he got it. And he will work exactly the way Witkoff was describing there, probably in a far more mercurial character as he does it, but he will work for a deal. He will try to get a deal. I believe that. I think that's true. And that would be good. But the Iranians are going to have to go, man, a second guy. We've done it a second time. I hope this one holds. And one would wonder if it would. Now, let's just shift gears and go to Ukraine. And this approach is not going to work. This approach is simply not going to work. You don't know what you don't know. And as Rumsfeld used to say, and Witkoff or whomever might be involved in this so far has demonstrated that this is going to be far more difficult because the Russians are not the Persians. It's just that simple. And the Russians have been fighting a war, lost a lot of people, shed a lot of blood, and won. And they think they're going to take this same kind of approach, making a deal for the deal maker Trump to Ukraine, which seems to be like they're thinking, going to be a disaster. And that, to me, unless we make the stupid decision to actually try to take Iran down, which I don't think we will. I just don't think the Pentagon will let that happen. Unless that happens, Ukraine is far more serious now with the fact that I don't think they know what they're doing. They don't know what they're doing here either. But here, the circumstances are conducive. The Iranians do know what they're doing. So the circumstances are conducive to Trump getting a deal. They're not so conducive on the other frontier, though. And this is very disturbing. And the other aspect of it is, you know, Israel is making war right now on three things. They're making war on their democracy, and that may very well produce a civil war. They're making war on Jews of the type that came to Israel and formed the state in the first place because they don't want them anymore. They don't want those kinds of Jews. Those kinds of Jews are too liberal. They're too much for democracy. They don't want those. What they want is Ben-Gvirs. They want little Ben-Gvirs, tons of them. So they're making war on the immigration, if you will, that might result into Israel once this is settled in some way. I'm not even sure there'll be too many European Jews that want to come. Maybe the Smotrich and Ben-Gvir types will want to come. And then the third thing they're doing is essentially destroying what's left of any semblance of a state in Israel. And of course, I should throw a fourth one in there. They're back to killing massively again. I was looking at some of the plans for North Gaza, what they're going to do in North Gaza, what they're going to do south of the Nazarene corridor, and then what they're going to do all the way to Rafah once again. It's just a repetition with even more killing and more destruction of what they did in the first few months of the war. It's phase two. And Netanyahu had absolutely no plans on going to a second stage of the ceasefire and no plans on getting the other hostages out. And this is going to make the civil war, if it happens, even more vicious and more terminating of the state of Israel. So that's a long-winded way to do it, but these things are wrapped together. You know, Al-Ansar, the Houthis, Ukraine, Israel, Syria, they're all wrapped together because this is part of the empire's desire to create that arc of instability from the Arctic Ocean to the Antarctic principally now from the Baltic through Ukraine down to the Levant and now into Syria, that they think will stop the erosion of power from west to east. Ultimately, they believe, I think, that they are going to have to bring China into some kind of deal, like Witkoff was talking about with Iran, and Trump is going to be the deal maker of the century there and get his Nobel Peace Prize. Thank you very much. But I think they're going to meet Armageddon there. I really do. And this arc of instability that they're preparing to try and halt the seepage of power, if you will, from the west to the east, is going to cause that to happen, because we're looking at the only way the U.S. is going to fight any of these entities, Russia, China together, Russia alone, China alone, Iran with them all, or Iran backed by Russia. The only way they're going to fight them is with conventional forces initially, and they're going to lose. And that means they're going to go nuclear. So we're looking at the number one nuclear power in the world, who's the only power in the world this news used nuclear weapons against human beings, Hiroshima and Nagasaki, 1945, killed 100,000 to 150,000 of them. Only power that's ever done that, being the only power to resume it. That's where it inevitably leads, this strategic approach that is so broken and being implemented by such rank amateurs. That's what it's leading to. Biden started it, though, and Trump has taken it over, with all the promise to do otherwise. And I'm all for him if he can do otherwise, rank amateur or not, strategic indecisiveness or not. I'm all for him. But I'm telling you, I'm checking my bets.
It has to. And that's what President Trump is committed to. He has said very clearly, as you stated unambiguously, Iran will not get a nuclear bomb under a Trump administration. Unacceptable, full stop, very clear. He said it, he'll keep saying it. Now, as we see with Vladimir Putin and Zelensky, there's only one man on the planet, and this is true, this is not hyperbole, one man on the planet who could bring them to the table and forge a lasting peace. And he's doing that right now. We're in the process of doing that. That is unique to Donald Trump because he's strategically unpredictable, he's strong, he's clear, and he's respected on the world stage. I think the same is true in Iran. We know the double talk of the Ayatollahs. You know it. You lay it out. I understand it. There have been secret, duplicitous moves for years and years and years. But we are at a moment under this administration where President Trump is giving them an offer. He is saying, now is your chance to come to the table and completely give up and dismantle your program. Let's talk. I'd prefer to talk rather than do anything else. At the same time, he is ensuring that at the Defense Department and across our military, we maintain all capabilities necessary to work with our partners to, if we have to, and we don't want to, but if we have to, prevent Iran from gaining nuclear capabilities. So he's clear. The position is clear. Iran understands their options. There's never been a more serious leader atop the United States of America. There's a very serious leader atop the State of Israel. There's a clear message that Iran cannot get a nuclear bomb. And we are prepared to enforce it, but we would much prefer that it be done at the table for the betterment of the Iranian people and for the betterment of peace. So we hope that's a possibility, but we understand the complication.
Yeah. Your take, Larry.
That clip right there illustrates why Pete Hegseth should never have been confirmed as Secretary of Defense. He's an intellectual lightweight. He's shallow. He's ignorant. He understands none of the history of the region. He understands none of the history of Donald Trump with respect to Iran. There was a deal in place to prevent Iran from having a nuclear weapon. It was called JCPOA. Who walked away from that? Donald Trump, not the Iranians. The Iranians have had, the Ayatollah Khamenei issued a fatwa going back, I think, to 2003-2004 that explicitly stated that it was against the tenets of Islam for Iran to acquire a nuclear weapon, an atomic bomb, that it was haram. So And in fact, I raised that with another person who, you know, was he considers himself, you know, up to date on foreign policy and those kinds of issues. And he goes, really? They said that? Yeah, they said that. So that's not even widely known in the United States. I guarantee you, Hegseth doesn't know that. This entire thing about saying, oh, we're going to stop Iran from getting a nuclear weapon, it's a red herring. It's a distraction. The Trump administration has bought into the lies of the Zionists. And, you know, we've now got a clear history of dealing with Israel. Israel is a toxic, malevolent, evil regime, in my view. And I hope that doesn't get you canceled. But the history of whether it's Israel's role in the assassination of John F. Kennedy, Israel's role in the attack on the USS Liberty, Israel's cynical support, financial support for Hamas, then to create Hamas by sustaining their operations, and then all of a sudden to make eliminating Hamas the central part of their policy. It is Israel's had its hooks into American society since 1960, and Pete Hegseth is one of those marionettes attached to the hand of the AIPAC puppet master, and he just dances to their tune. So the notion that Trump is respected, you know, Russia's trying to be nice to Trump, but they recognize Trump's history. Trump was supplying offensive weapons to Ukraine. Trump walked away from the intermediate nuclear missile agreement back in 2018, the INF treaty, Intermediate Nuclear Forces Agreement. So Trump hasn't done anything to establish his credibility with his people. If anything, he's seen it almost as mercurial, unreliable, emotional. Reacts, doesn't appear to have a clear strategy in mind. So this kind of bombast from someone like Hegseth, it's going to potentially wind up get a bunch of Americans killed, in my view.
By the way, they're doing the same, Larry, in Syria. I don't know if you saw the interview of Witkoff. He was talking about the new Syrian government says they have changed. They're not those old.
Yeah. Yeah. No. In fact, bad. I'm going to put down some black marks on your record here. You didn't read my article on it. I wrote about the Witkoff interview in detail. At sonar21.com, put in a plug, come read it. Witkoff demonstrated a surprising level of ignorance. And one of the comments that he made was with respect to Syria, where, oh man, you know, we're not the same people, you told Tucker, you and I aren't the same people we were 30 years ago. Yeah, but we're not talking about Jelani from 30 years ago. We're talking about him from a year ago. Well, they're cutting off heads. And now, even now, with him heading up this government, and he's got a new name, Al-Sharam, something like that. They're killing Christians, Alawites, and Shi'i. They're cutting their heads off. They're murdering entire families. So just because the man's got a new suit, just because he trimmed his beard and got a haircut, doesn't mean that he had a change of heart and suddenly became Mahatma Gandhi, for God's sake. And that was so shocking about Witkoff. Yeah, that Bashar al-Assad, man, he was a bad man. He protected Christians. He protected Alawite. He protected Shi'i. He even protected Jews. He fought against these Islamic extremists who happened to be Sunni, many of whom happened to have been financed by the West, the United States in particular. So it's just, Witkoff comes off as a very nice, genial man, seems well-intentioned. And I'm sure he knows the real estate market in and out. But he's just flat out ignorant about the Middle East. He sees everything completely through the Zionist lens. Does not understand. In fact, I don't think he understands the difference between Shia and Sunni. You know, maybe that bad. But he admitted in that, of course, that interview with Tucker, I haven't talked to Hamas. I haven't dealt with them directly. And yet, when he's talking about Russia, we need to have communication. Both sides, we need to talk. Well, dude, which is it? Either you're going to engage and talk to the other side or you're not. And so it underscores, if you will, almost the schizophrenic nature of Trump's policy. He is completely beholden. Three, 4 weeks ago, I was probably saying, well, maybe he's not. Maybe because he doesn't have to be reelected, he's going to take a more middle of the road approach. No, I was wrong. He is fully in the pocket of the Zionists. They're pulling the strings. He's the monkey with the organ grinder. Organ grinder cranks the tune. Trump dances the dance.
Larry, he said something about the babies and the atrocities on October 7th, and he was watching the. He said that
someone showed him. Yeah. Well, he said rapes and the beheading of the Israeli soldier. I was waiting for him to say the babies. He didn't say the babies. So let's, I don't want someone to accuse you of being inaccurate because you're always on top of your game.
Yeah. But we heard from Chuck Schumer. He said this.
Bad until 2017. And in 20, I mean, until October 7th last year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden.
When the Jews were attacked by Hamas
right. initially, and the brutal, the women raped and the little babies' heads chopped off and all of that brutally. And all of a sudden, anti-Semitism developed.
Larry, one of the points that they're making, it's Chuck Schumer. It's not someone, an ordinary guy talking about what has happened on October 7th. He's the head of the Democratic Party. We can say that. He's so important when it comes to the Democratic Party, and he pictures the conflict this way. And we see Witkoff, on his part, as you mentioned, he mentioned that he saw some, I don't know, raping. He said what he exactly said.
Oh, he said, the women were raped. Watch this video. The Israelis, let's call them the Zionists, they've made this propaganda video. And they claim that it shows all these Israeli women being raped. You know, it's the old story of like in the United States, they used to have this meme of black men raping white women, you know? And so this is a variant of that racist trope that, these hairy Arabs are raping these pure Israeli virgins. It didn't happen. It's a lie. It's a fabrication. Did they saw off the head of one Israeli soldier? I think so. But again, they were attacking soldiers, guys with weapons. That's not terrorism. That's war. A lot of the women that were captured were Israeli soldiers. They weren't, barmaids at a rock festival. But the truth doesn't matter. It has now gotten to the point that if you dare to criticize Israel and its conduct, you're guilty of anti-Semitism. And yet, the irony of that is when you're speaking out on behalf of the Palestinian people, they are Semites. So you're being pro-Semitic, not anti-Semitic. You're being pro-Semitic. You're just basically criticizing one cousin for attacking another. That's what's going on here. The Israelis don't want to admit that, but genetically, culturally, they're cousins of the Palestinians. They're not strangers. The Palestinians are not aliens who were dropped off here by Martians Cruise in the universe. You know, they all trace back to Father Abraham. It means they're cousins, they're family members. But what is so, what's going on right now over the since October 7th, and AIPAC just really ramped up its propaganda campaign in the United States. The political establishment, which is financially beholden to these people, they've succeeded in creating this meme that anybody that speaks out against Israel and its genocidal policies is anti-Semitic. Why do you hate the Jew? This has nothing to do with being Jewish. This has everything to do with being these Zionist crazies who believe that they're the only human beings allowed to live. And when you protest that, all of a sudden you're an anti-Semite.
How, Larry, one of the points that Witkoff mentioned is that he's talking to Hamas through Qataris. And yeah. It's so amazing why he didn't try to talk with them directly, because you don't need someone in the middle to negotiate with, to talk with. What do they need to do that?
Well, you know why. If they talk to him directly, they're acknowledging that they're human beings. They're acknowledging that they're people. They're acknowledging that they're legitimate. You know, this is a deliberate strategy on the part of the United States. And look at the one guy that the United States put in to negotiate who talked directly to Hamas and actually had some nice things to say about the people he was talking to. What'd they do to him? Boom, fired, gone. You can't humanize these people. If you show these as human beings, all of a sudden, you can't justify murdering left and killing their children. As long as you treat them like insects that you can be squashed like a bug, hey, no big deal. But my God, if you're talking to them, if you're dealing with them directly, all of a sudden, you see that they are human beings with a soul, the same soul that God put in everybody. Can't have that.
Larry, do you see the attack on Yemenis as part of this pressure campaign on Iran? And the main goal would be Iran?
Yeah, no, attacking Yemen is just a stepping stone to go after Iran. It's to lay the predicate. You know, they reportedly have targeted and killed some of the Houthi leadership. And this reflects, you know, it's almost like the United States is embracing Israel's wrongheaded strategy, kill the leaders, decapitate the top. Well, what we've learned through history is when you take off the senior leadership, what tends to arise after that is more radical, more intent on destroying. You know, when you look at, let's take the case of Hassan Nasrallah, the head of Hezbollah until he was murdered. He was not a fire-breathing radical urging his followers to go out immediately, strap on suicide vests, and kill the Israelis. In fact, he was murdered while meeting to discuss an actual ceasefire to bring an end to the conflict. If they're taking out Houthi leadership, man, God help Israel and the United States, because the folks who take over may not be inclined to hold back or show restraint. I still think there's a genuine risk of a U.S. aircraft carrier getting sunk there in the Red Sea. If that happens, that's going to be a game changer, because all of a sudden the United States is going to be caught with the fact that, hey, we're not invincible. Number one. Number two, though, the U.S. officials are accepting assumptions about the Houthis, about the Iranians, that are false. They believe, for example, that Iran is has no air defense, that it's stripped naked, it's bare, that the United States can just waltz in with an F-35 and drop bombs and destroy things. And all we have to do is a day of bombing and Iran's nuclear program is gone. Except, you know, Iran is not building a nuclear weapon and has made it clear that it is against its religious beliefs. But hey, facts don't matter. It's all about emotion. But when you have that assumption that, hey, you know, it's like if you're a burglar and you say, ah, man, that house, it looks vacant. There's nobody in there. Yeah, we're going to go in and take it. And you break in and all of a sudden you find it's occupied. The people inside got guns. You get shot. I think that's what's going to happen to the United States. And if it plays out this way, that the United States with Israel launches a massive attack on Iran, fully expecting to waltz in and hit whatever target, but in fact are met with a robust, stiff air defense and electronic warfare capability that U.S. aircraft are shot down, pilots are taken hostage, and then Iran retaliates by hitting U.S. military facilities with hypersonic ballistic missiles, as well as and hitting Israel, it's going to change the world. It will be a game changer, potentially throwing us into a global conflict that will bring in Russia and China as well to help defend Iran. It's very dangerous. And Trump, in his arrogance and hubris, is playing with fire.
Larry, if Yemenis sink an aircraft carrier, do you think that would, how would that influence the response from the United States? Are they going to double down? Is Israel going to achieve what they wanted to achieve with the case of Iran?
Well, it would, I think the United States would be inclined to double down. Again, they're going to run into a problem, though. So the missiles, each of these carrier strike groups have at least two destroyers and one cruiser. And on board each of those destroyers is a vertical launch system of the Aegis missile class. And basically it's a tube in the deck of the ship, 96 of them, though, you know, row after row. And when they fire those, the system doesn't have a way to automatically reload. And the missiles that they are firing, there's a limited number. My understanding is right now there's less than 600 total. So if the United States starts using those, it's going to, you know, it could run out very quickly. So this is where that would be a limitation on Trump saying, oh, you sunk our carrier, boy, by God, we're going to let you have it. They come back in with, what, another aircraft carrier and a group of destroyers, and they get sunk? Or they say, okay, we're going to go punish Iran. We'll teach Iran a lesson. Again, the U.S. Navy has limited firepower. Simply, it's constrained because we don't have the supply chain is not robust enough to crank out new missiles, for example, that can be readily resupplied. So this is the Trump team is operating on bad information. And you try to tell them that, they don't want to listen. Oh, we know what we're doing. The arrogance is what's going to get them into trouble. Absolutely no humility. They think they can kill their way out of this. And, you know, they're not willing to recognize the other political dimensions that are involved.